And tonight, our main speaker will share his experience, strength, and hope with us. Please join me in welcoming Sandy B. from Tampa. Yeah.
Here we go. Well, good evening, everybody. My name's Sandy Beach, and I'm an alcoholic. And I can't tell you how happy I am to be here. Chris and I came out for Scott's memorial service, and so we came a day or two early, and we've just been running into friends and AA and going to lunch and just being taken all around. And sitting tonight at dinner and hearing all about Chuck C. and stories about early California AA, it was just wonderful. I can't tell you how wonderful it is to look back on the years I've been in AA and almost cry because it's been so much fun. I got sober on Pearl Harbor Day of 1964. In Washington, D.C., and I had the same sponsor for over 42 years. His name was Bill Terwilliger. I wish anybody could have the same sponsor for that long and see what that relationship turns into, and you become like brothers. And it's just a wonderful thing in my life. I'm not going to tell much about my story. I'd rather talk about our program. But I'll say very briefly that I grew up in New Haven, Connecticut. I was born in 1931. There was a different world then than it is now. And even to me, that seems like a long time ago. And I have one sister who has 30 years in AA. I have six kids and 15 grandchildren. And two of my daughters are in AA, and my grandson, one of my grandsons in AA. And I mention that to show that I have covered three generations. I hope everyone else is doing your share to get new members. My three sons were into drugs and alcohol in college. I had three seats saved for them. And one by one, they just said, well, enough of that. I think I'll become a perfectly normal, responsible person. And part of me was very ashamed of them. Because they had this vision of the four of us showing up at various events. But boy, I'll tell you, I had one daughter who made up for everything. If I told you her drinking story, you'd see why I'm so proud of her. It was unbelievable what she was able to pull off without dying. So it's wonderful when your kids join the program. You just got this whole new relationship, and I just love it. Anyway, as I said, I grew up then. There's just the four of us. I didn't feel like I belonged. So what? That's all alcoholics. Went to the Catholic Church, scared me to death. My sister loved it. She thought it was the friendliest place in the world. I thought it was like a prison camp. When I went to confession, I thought they were gathering evidence for later. When I was about 8 or 9, you know, when you get ideas, you never check them with anybody else. They become official truths. And I remember looking at that crucifix, and it was like it spoke to me. It said, little boy, do you see this? And I went, yes. Well, this is what God did to his only son that he loved. Guess what he's going to do to you? And I think I fainted and blamed it on bad food or something like that. So I was absolutely terrified by the idea of God and all this stuff. So that offered me no comfort whatsoever. So I'm off on my own trying to get comfortable, and I couldn't do it. I was just anxious, nervous, frightened, just totally frustrated and acting cool. Hey, how you doing? Oh, yeah, great, doing fine. And I often wondered how those other guys found out what was going on. And then I found out they didn't know what was going on either. And I ended up going right in. I was into a prep school and went right into the local university at Yale. And I started meeting all these guys from around the country, and they were much different than I was. They came from money and prestige, and I knew I didn't belong. And the pressure was intense, and so I ended up taking a drink, and it literally transformed my entire life. I remember I'd been drinking about an hour, and I went, oh, I should have been drinking in grammar school. This resolves every conflict I've ever had. I see a world that is wonderful to live in. I see people that I just think are wonderful. I just couldn't get enough of the world. Just looking around, taking it in through the third drink eyes, and I just adored it. So I said if three drinks did that, then maybe 20 would be rather spectacular. And of course, I got violently ill. And the next morning, I felt like I was going to die, like all of you did after your first big drunk. And I sat there just still dry heaving, and the thought occurred to me, are you going to drink again tonight? And it was like that. And I just went, of course I am. This almost dying is a small price to pay for what happened to me last night. So I already was making a decision to pay any price for what I'd only experienced once. That's how important alcohol became. That's why I'm an alcoholic and other people aren't. They don't have that kind of a spiritual awakening from drinking. They go, hey, this is fun. Oh, boy, let's have some fun. I have discovered the secret of life. I now am connected to the universe. It was a huge experience. And, of course, I chased it till it almost killed me. And I came into AA. I did almost all my drinking in the Marine Corps. The Korean War was going on, the draft, so I joined the Marines with a bunch of other guys. To make a long story short, I fell in love with the Corps. I was finally part of something. I absolutely adored it. I saw a movie about pilots. I'd never been in the plane, but I signed up for flight school anyway. And I met a lovely woman who's the mother of my children. And we went off to Pensacola to flight school. I got airsick on the way down. I had airsick in the planes. And eventually that air sickness went away, and I did very well. And I got a regular commission, and I was making a career. This is what I wanted to do for 30 years. But alcohol had other plans. And I flew about 12 years, and near the end of that time, it was really hard to get in the plane. I was flying a photo plane during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and it is a very high-performance plane. And I remember I would crawl in, and the day before, my heart felt like it had stopped. I'm having, like, anxiety attacks. I'm losing consciousness. I'm flying with one hand on the ejection seat. And I'm just going, you shouldn't be doing this. But there was nowhere else to go. There was no alcohol program. I never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. And I just said, well, you just have to keep hanging in here, hanging in. And it was terrifying. And I eventually threw up my hands, told them I couldn't do it anymore. And they waited 3 months, and they turned me in to an air traffic controller. And that's what I did the last 2 years of my drinking. And fortunately, when I went overseas to take over this unit, the senior enlisted men saw me. It didn't take long, if you saw me, to realize you would not want me in charge of anything. And they just said, Captain, oh, you're glad to have you here, et cetera, et cetera. Please don't talk to any airplanes. So my job was to show up at work on my bicycle and drink coffee and shake and sneak drinks. And during that year, I lost about 40 pounds from what I weigh now due to malnutrition. I was very sick. I was close to alcohol poisoning. I stopped hanging around my friends. Didn't even go to happy hour with the guys. I just stayed, and I tried to live on soup and juice and vodka. I figured if you get some juice in. And so I was really desperately ill, and I was sent back to Quantico, Virginia, which is how I ended up in D.C., to go to a career school where you become a colonel and all that. And I'm in the school and have a grand mal seizure. Almost bit my tongue off. Took me to Naval Hospital. They looked at me for 5 days trying to figure out what caused the convulsion. No one knew anything about alcohol. And then I went into the DTs. I started seeing the CIA, and they were trying to break me mentally, and it was like Mission Impossible, and I'm freaking out, but I'm keeping notes so that I'll be able to prove my case against these guys. And I'm seeing stuff that isn't there. It was terrifying. And I guess they saw me screaming and running around, so they captured me and put me in a straitjacket and locked me up for 6 months in the nut ward. And there was nothing about alcoholism. There was just absolutely nothing. You were just another one of the crazy people. And somehow the local AA group talked the psychiatrist into allowing a meeting, even though he didn't think they had any alcoholics. But the corpsman knew, and when it was meeting night, they came into the ward. All right, all drunks fall in. And there were three of us in our little blue bathrobes, and we went down to hear these speakers. And I really identified with them. I went, God, these guys are cool. Because, you know, they drank like I did, and they were energetic and all that. And I remember saying to myself, I got to get their phone numbers. If I run into a guy with a problem, I'm going to tell them about these guys. This is just amazing what they have. But it didn't apply to me. And eventually I was an outpatient, going home and coming back to the nut ward the next day and then being home on weekends. And boy, it didn't take long, even though they told me if I had another drink, my career was over. I'm starting to sneak vodka into the nut ward. And it was inevitable I was going to get caught. So on Pearl Harbor Day of 1964, I called the intergroup. My plan was to join AA, and then when I went back to the nut ward and they saw I was all screwed up, I'd say, well, I joined AA, and look what happened. I was going to blame AA for going back to drinking. But I didn't count on my sponsor, who was an infantry marine. He's about this big, and he just came into my house, and I think the first thing he said was, get in the car. We're going to a meeting. And I said, well, don't you want to? No, I don't want to talk about anything. Get in the car. And off we went to this meeting, and the meeting was a group anniversary, and the meeting lasted 5 hours. They had anniversaries, they had dinner with ham and turkey and blah, 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 and then they had square dancing. And it's out in the fiddles playing, it's out in Manassas, and I'm just, I had 3 hours sobriety when I got there, and I have 8 hours sobriety now. I'm going nuts in my skin, and people are going, isn't sobriety wonderful? No, it's awful, awful. And I was going to make a break for it, but it was out in the country. There wasn't even a street light, and it was sort of sleeting rain in December there. And so there was nowhere to run. And I felt this hand on my shoulder. It was an Al-Anon lady named Betsy Lynch, and I got to know her and her husband real well. And I turned around, and it was like I was looking at an angel. And she said, come on back in. It's going to be fine. And I believed her. And I went back in, and the whole program consists of doing what your sponsor tells you to do. If you're new, you have one question. What do I do next? And that's what I've done, and I'm sober all these years. And some wonderful things happened. I lost my career, all kinds of things. You know, when you get sober, or if you don't stay sober, life has this and that, and you're divorced, and now you're bankrupt, and now you're this, and now you're that. You never know what's in store for you. But no matter what happens, this is what's in store for you. You're going to end up happier than you ever, ever dreamed. So don't even pay attention to the events. Those don't count. They have no influence on whether you're happy or not. Happiness here is totally an inside job. I didn't realize that, but everybody kept telling me that. You know, don't worry, this is fine. No, Dad, that happens to everybody. Really? Seems like it's happening to me more often than some of the other people. And so all these events, which are really irrelevant, happened to me. But the main event is the transformation that is taking place inside. And so I thought I'd talk tonight. I always like to give myself a challenge and come up with something. So you hear the question, what is spirituality? You know what I mean? What is it? This is a spiritual program. Okay, spirituality. What the heck is that? Now, when I attempt to talk about that, I'm not giving you the answer to that question. I'm giving you what it looks like to me today. When I look out and I go, what is spirituality? This is what I see, and it's totally different than what I saw 10 years ago. It's a different answer because I'm seeing things differently, which is what spirituality is. And so if you ask me today, I would say, well, spirituality is not a theory. It is the realization deep down inside of you as an individual that there actually is an entirely new way to look at everything. That's pretty big, isn't it? That there actually exists an entirely different way to look at everything. And I go, wow. Now the question is, would you like to find out what this is, or keep the one you got? Now if you think about the one you got, in other words, when I say the one you got, I mean your present view of the world and you. Now most people would complain about their situation and reluctantly hang on to it. That's what we do. Yeah, it's a mess, but it's my mess. We just don't want to change our mind about anything. And so we're stuck with what we call our old ideas. We're stuck with our present view on everything. And the reason we're stuck with it is that we thought it up. That's why it's mine. I put all this junk together. It's me. This is my package. This is my view of the world. Well, how does it feel to live there? I mean, all we do is, what do we hear from each other? I got the worst thing in the world, man. What a terrible problem. Well, would you like to give it all up and try something new? No, I think I'll see. I think I'll fine-tune it. I'm going to fine-tune it. I got to get a little more patient. I got to give it. I can talk her into changing. But there's this entirely different way of looking at things. So nobody does this voluntarily. So it's forced on us through the disease of alcoholism. And it cracks the closed mind that we have. Just a little. Just enough for a little opening concerning alcohol. And finally, we just have to throw up the flag and go, okay, regarding alcohol, I don't know what it is or how to fix it. So you can help me there, but nowhere else. I'll still control the rest of it. Even though you've been given a glimpse of what it's like if you stop running it, in that area, we hold on to the other areas. And I'll give you an example. In other words, spirituality, if we look at the big book, when we get to the 10th step, it's suddenly after the promises, Bill just simply writes a little sentence that says, we've entered the world of the Spirit. Anybody remember that sentence in the big book? Right after step 9, the promises. We've entered the world. What is the world of the Spirit? The world of the Spirit is a new place to exist that follows different guidelines than the material world that we have lived in all our lives. And so everything sounds strange, but we have to get used to this new way of looking at things. And I'll give you my favorite example and see if you understand why this is so spiritual. When I was newly sober, I had a phobia about hospitals. If I went to visit someone in the hospital, it reminded me of dying. That's where people die. in the hospital, and I would start sweating, and I could not go in. And there was a guy in our group, and we were going to go visit him, and I could not go. And my sponsor said, well, why didn't you go? I can't go. I feel like I'm going to pass out. It's just, it's way too much. He said, well, what if I go with you? I said, I'll just stand right next to you. We'll just walk in together, and you'll be safe. I said, okay. And we walked in together, and I felt safe. We actually went and visited this guy. And then he says, call me when you want to visit him again. So I did. And he came over, and I walked in next to him, and I visited, and I felt perfectly safe. And so one day I said to him, I guess someday I'll be able to walk in here by myself. He said, no, I'll just always go with you. That's spirituality. See, we can hardly wait to not have any help at all. We can hardly wait. Okay, thanks. I got it. In the old world, that's a sign of weakness. Oh, you need someone to go to the hospital with you? And we establish the same relationship with our higher power. Thanks, God, you got me through it. I'll take it from here. And as we work in the steps, we can hardly wait for self-sufficiency to kick back in. And we look at the program and we thank the program for making us strong enough to not need the program. That's the old world. That's what we're conditioned. Our whole sense of self is conditioned on doing it on our own. And over here, they don't want anything done on your own. The spiritual world, you never do anything on your own. You constantly receive help. You're in a constant state of receiving help. And life becomes very light. Doesn't weigh, it's like a feather. Not me. I'm just along for the ride. I remember Chuck, my hero, and he told me a couple of times, you've got it wrong. It's not your job to take care of yourself. That's God's job. Your job is to take care of his people. You just go out and do what you're led by him to do, and you will be well taken care of. And, of course, you walk away, and, I mean, that man, he would reassure you, and you'd walk away, and then you'd go, I don't think that's true. You certainly have to take care of yourself. I was brought up that way. Remember that? We were all taught that. See, what we're doing, we're going, now we're back in the material world. This is how we were brought up. Now we're coming over, and Chuck's going, oh, no, don't listen to any of that. What was I taught when I was little? Son, sit down. Let's get something straight. This is your life. Nobody's going to live it for you. Nobody's going to do the work for you. It's up to you to make a success out of yourself, to study hard. You have to do it. It's your life. So we follow the plan. And maybe you really do good at it. And I assumed that in that plan, if you followed it successfully, you'd end up happy. But they left that out. They said, oh, by the way, you don't end up happy. You end up successful, but you don't end up happy. So we come here, and if we were to talk to Chuck, he'd go, oh, no, that's not it. It's not your life at all. It's God's. Your life is God's. Your job is to let him make something wonderful out of you. That's a different story than I ever heard. My job is to let God make something wonderful out of me. The problem with that plan is it leaves me out. Okay, so what do I do? Whatever you're told. So I go around talking to people and they say, what do you do for a living? And my answer is, oh, whatever I'm told. You want me to say that at the club? You want me to say that to these grown-up people? Say, what do you do? Whatever I'm told. So you can see, this is a hard transformation, isn't it? And yet I can remember Chuck saying, the last 22 years, I got up every morning and just got guided by God. My whole plan. I just do all this work for fun and for free. For fun and for free. So what happens to people that they want to live this way? We call it an awakening. That's what we call it. What that means is this story that there's another place to live, that there's another way of looking at everything, we get a glimpse of. We suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. That is a personal awareness. Up till that point, God's a theory. God, oh yeah, I know it. God, you know, power, power greater than me. Power, power, power. Have you ever been contacted? No, I haven't been contacted, but I know all about it. And then one day you just go, hey, this is real. That's very personal. And it generally happens very suddenly. It doesn't happen early or late in sobriety, but when it happens, it takes your breath away. You say, wow, this is all God doing this. Oh, wow. That's called a glimpse. That's what Bill calls, we had a glimpse of the kingdom. We had just a little look at what is over there. So where is over there? Where is over there? Well, the world that we live in is composed of our old ideas. That's the building material of the world that you and I live in. It exists in our mind, and your world is nothing like mine. And I don't really know what your world is like. You can be married to somebody for many, many years, and you really don't know their world, and they don't know yours. They know a lot about it, but there's no way they could know it, because it's yours. It's composed of your ideas from when you were little. And it's a complete package that we call our world. Only in AA, we don't call it that. We call it our story. My story, I was born in New Haven, Connecticut, blah, 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 and we tell our story. Well, that's just a story. How do we know that's real? It's a story about your life. A guy got up one night and he said, hi, everybody, my story is divided into two parts, what happened during the years that I drank and what I thought happened during the years that I drank. And everybody just broke up. Well, I would submit to you that we could do that about any part of your life. My childhood is divided into two parts, what happened when I was a child and what I thought happened when I was a child. College years, two parts. What happened when I was at college and what I thought happened when I was at college. So there's the story is where we live. And this world that we live in, we're the only one in it. How do you like that? You're the only one in that story because it's yours. How did it get there? You made it up. Okay, I'm here. I'm right here, and there's just me in here. Isn't that funny? There's just me. And this is what the world is like. That's scary over there. Hate them. They're rotten. This is bad. This is good. This is up. This is down. Terrible path. Terrible path. Never. It's going to haunt me forever. Really? Who told you? I did. I told me it would haunt me. I told me it would haunt me forever, and then I believed it. Oh, my God. It really is. Holy cow! So that's that world. Now, if you talk to people, I remember the first time I came in, you started really getting serious about this, and I said, well, what is God? And I found out God is everything. And really, yeah. Yeah, he's the sun, he's you, he's those people, he's this cup of coffee, this podium, this and that and this and that. And anything in the universe, that's God. The entire universe, that's God. And I thought about it, and as hard as I thought, I couldn't help concluding that I existed in addition to the entire universe. Does that sound crazy? There's the whole universe and me. Does anybody else relate to that? Yeah, I see all that. There's all the stars. There's all that. There's all that. And I'm over here. I'm not part of the universe. I'm not part of anything. I live in my own little world. Anybody else live in their own little world? We say that about people all the time. Well, the own little world is our old ideas. And what do we say about some of the ideas? What about the idea that somehow we'll be able to drink like other people? This idea has to be smashed. Smashed. God, we're going to take one of my perfectly good ideas and smash it. What a way to treat somebody. Say, is that one of your ideas? Boom. That's what, when Clancy talks, you remember he go up there and say, well, in my opinion, your opinion, who wants your opinion? I don't want that. So we start realizing maybe, just possibly, some of my ideas might, not are, might be wrong. Possibly wrong. Remember that? Possibly wrong. These are people who were never wrong about anything, ever. And you never would let the words come out of your mouth. Well, Sally, you're wrong, right? No. No, I'm not wrong. What do you mean I'm wrong? Wrong was just, it's not acceptable. You can't be wrong. But finally, my sponsor worked me into a corner on an issue. And finally, I looked at him and I said, okay, Bill, you're right. And he said, no, you're wrong. I said, well, it's the same thing. Well, say it. And I'll tell you, that stuck in my throat like a battleship turning around in a little lake. Wrong, wrong. It would hardly come out. Wrong. Oh, yeah, I'm wrong. I still can't hear you. I'm wrong. It felt like you got out of jail. I'm wrong. I really am wrong. I knew I was wrong. I just would never say it. And finally I said I was wrong. There was such freedom in being wrong. And part of my world disappeared. You follow what I'm saying? And then he pointed out something else I was wrong about. And then every time I had a situation that was terrible, I would run up and I'd go, okay, Bill, the sky is really falling. Blah, 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 blah. My wife's going to think, I don't have any money, and the Marine Corps is going to get me around. And he'd go, okay. But now let's look at this. You got 9 months sobriety, right? Yeah. You got a whole bunch of new friends. Yeah, I got new friends, and they really like, yeah, I know, yeah. And they invite you out to coffee. Yeah, I know, I go out to coffee. Hey, you're going to speak tomorrow night? Yeah, I'm speaking tomorrow night. Oh, boy. And then I'd go, well, if you look at it that way. If you look at it that way, he said, why not look at it my way instead of your way? Why not look at it my way? So every time I went to see him with a problem, he showed me I didn't have one. That's what he showed me. You don't have a problem, you're looking at it wrong. You're looking at it wrong. So he didn't solve problems, he made them dissolve. He just made them disappear. That's what our promises talk about. They magically disappear. They magically slip away. What kind of a verb is that? You ever go to a psychiatrist? Don't worry, I'll have financial insecurity. Just slip away when you're not looking. It will disappear. All of these spiritual verbs a magician would use because there's no logic to it. It just happens. It is gone. The desire to drink is gone. My anger at this is gone. Gone. What's being destroyed with all of this? My old ideas and the world that they represented. So there's a destruction going on of this horrible, lonely place that I live in. And as that crumbles, what's God's world starts to get revealed. And we look around and see a very happy place to live. such a happy place that there's nothing for alcohol to fix. And if there's nothing for alcohol to fix, it's real easy to not drink. Why would I drink? I'm already happy. So that's the process. The joy of being wrong. We got a whole step, the 10th step. And suddenly you find yourself going, oh, what the heck else am I wrong about? Gone. Gone. And we just start getting lighter and lighter. If you're new, imagine this. Just for the heck of it. Imagine that you forgave every single wrong that was ever done to you. Every unkind comment, every unfair action ever taken by a person, the government, a school, the police, the IRS, every single unjust thing that was done to you, if you forgave it, what would be left inside of you? That would empty about 90% of you, because that's what's in there, is the recollection of all the injustices that happened to me, and they weigh a ton. It's a burden you walk around with. It's just so hard to get through life. Oh, struggle, struggle. And I decided to let everybody have a blanket pardon for everything that was ever done. And I feel like a feather. What is there for me to get upset about? Where did it go? I just allowed old ideas to disappear. So as this process happens, Bill writes, something of great moment is apt to occur. And all of this flowery language that we called theoretical, oh, the fourth dimension of existence. You know how you'd read that to me? Oh, we were rocketed into the fourth dimension. And then, you know, I'd go outside. What the hell was he smoking when he wrote that? Rocketed into the fourth dimension. What? Whoa! Well, when you see people in the program that have that glow and have that energy, that it's inexplainable. It's not something that you learn. It's something that you see, and then they show you how to get it. The Big Book is a treasure map. It's not the treasure. The treasure is the awakening. That's the treasure. This is how you find it. I'm your treasure guide. When I sponsor somebody, I said, okay, you ready? We're going to see a whole new world when we get through here. You're going to awaken. We're going to take these steps because we're only looking for one result out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's called an awakening. That's what it's called in our 12th step. Having had this awakening as the one result of these steps, we then show other people how to have this magic happen to them. So that's my job as a guide. I'm now a spiritual guide. Come on over. I'll show you how to go. And you need a guide. You've never been in this territory before. None of us have. You wouldn't hunt lions without a guide. Well, there's one out here somewhere. I'll just walk around. I like doing things on my own. Last seen. And so when we try to do a spiritual program on our own, it really is funny. I may just hear my own inventory and give myself some feedback on it. So all I'm trying to suggest is the simplicity of this whole journey. You get a guide and you follow him or her. That's it. The problem with alcoholics and most human beings, they do not like simplicity. Drives them right up the wall. Remember when they first told you, okay, just don't drink. And you had remember all the problems we had, and they just look at us and go, just don't drink. And they go, did they hear me? It can't be that simple, just don't drink. Well, I'll take you all the way up to when we get to the world of the spirit. We've done all this work, and we're now in the 10th step, continuing to maintain our condition. Continuing the inventory, when we're wrong, get rid of that too, more freedom. And Bill writes, we've now entered the world of the Spirit. What are the new ground rules? We knew what the old ones in the material world, there's about 6,000 of them. What is this new spiritual world? How does that function? And then it goes on to say, well, whenever we're upset, disturbed, frightened, anxious, all the things that happen to human beings, we ask God at once to remove them. Okay, any questions? That's the whole plan. Got it? Everybody got it? Oh, no, it's got to be more than that. It's much more complicated than that. It can't be that simple. You just ask God to remove them. I mean, that's like second grade. People know life's much more complicated than that. You see what I'm saying? It's that when this simple, beautiful answer is given to us, it can't be that simple. I'm much more complex than that. Well, when we were out drinking, we didn't ask for a different solution. Oh, you feeling bad tonight? Just drink. Okay, thanks. Didn't matter what you were upset about. Just take a drink. Remember that guy come in the bar? What happened to you? Oh, my wife left me. Oh, hey, let me buy you a drink. Hey, I got cancer. I'm going to die soon. Let me buy you a drink. Doesn't matter what the problem was. We had one solution, and the same thing in here. So if you're new, I'm just telling you, you've stumbled in to a roadmap to a world that you can't see now. But there's guides in here that'll take you there. And when you get there, you will fall on your knees out of gratitude. Thank you all very much.